It is Tuesday, March the 18th, 2014. I am Steve Growick, along with Frank D., another edition of the Growick Report podcast. Today we're going to center our discussion on the New World Order, the formation of it, where it went, and why it ultimately collapsed, and the result of WCW falling and eventually being purchased by Vince McMahon and the World Wrestling Federation. But quickly, let me remind you of Growick.net, your 24/7 source for all your wrestling news. Definitely check it out for late-breaking news, the rosters, polls, Hall of Fame, pay-per-view results, TV ratings going back to 1998, a period that we're going to be talking about here on this podcast. We've got a great audio section with our previous podcast, Frank D. and myself. We got the Body Slam podcast, great interviews. We interviewed Scotty Riggs from the WCW era there. You can check those out at growick.net/audio, or just go to the growick.net, go down to the bottom of the page, and find audio, and you can check out all our previous editions of our podcast or interviews. Some great content there for your listening pleasure. And also during the month of March, we encourage you to go to growick.net and vote on the greatest Intercontinental Champion Tournament. We're getting close to the Sweet 16 round, and we definitely appreciate your votes and deciding who's going to be voted the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. We're going to find out very quickly at growick.net. But today, Frank D. is with me. And Frank, I know this is a topic that is near and dear to both of our hearts because we're both big NWO fans. And it's going to be fun to go back and kind of reminisce about the great days of the New World Order.
Absolutely. It's one of the angles that has been tried several times since the original, inception back in 96. And I don't know, man. It's just like, nobody can capture that magic that they had back in 96. And we'll probably never, ever see it ever again.
I would tend to agree with you. The really last hot period in wrestling was 96. And, of course, the month of March, I believe that the documentary portion of WWE Network, Beyond the Ring, they have the NWO documentary currently. I guess it's actually going to premiere this week. And let's go back to the 96 period. I think it really kind of predates it going back to maybe 92, 93, 94, 95, where there really was a dull period in wrestling. A lot of things were getting old, getting stale. WWF was in some trouble. They had some years where they were actually losing money. And then 96 comes around, and Ted Turner has already bought WCW. He's got Eric Bischoff in charge. He's got the checkbook out, and Eric Bischoff decided to spend some money. And he reaches out to Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, who are kind of, what a coincidence, their contracts are up about the same time, offers them a lot of money, a lot fewer dates, and suddenly we have Hall and Nash a part of WCW. And I kind of remember this period, Frank, because I remember not watching wrestling on a consistent basis at this time. I watch it occasionally, and then I heard about, hey, WCW signed Razor, WCW signed Diesel. Maybe I'll tune in and see what they're going to do with them. And this is kind of when, they played up the portion of the gimmick or the angle where, we're here, I'm here, my friend is here, I'm going to bring my friend in. And then we kind of started the ball rolling with NWO. And I think this is when people really started paying attention that, wow, yeah, they just took two of WWF's main players, and suddenly they're in WCW. So you have to tune in, Frank, and see, where they go with these two guys.
Yeah, exactly. And to give a little backstory on what was actually happening there to get Hall and Nash to go to WCW to begin with, both men, felt that they weren't being, adequately paid in the WWF. Kevin Nash stated that his wife was pregnant. And WCW offered them a deal, and I actually offered Scott Hall a deal first, and then Hall went to Nash. The two talked about it, and they just wanted Vince McMahon to match the offer, give them some type of a guarantee. They would even take less money, and they would stay. Well, Vince said he couldn't do it because if he did it for them, then he'd have to do it for everybody else in the locker room. And then Hall and Nash went down south to WCW, and really just, the Monday Night Wars, Steve, were going on already from, September 95 up until this point. But like you said, really now with Hall and Nash jumping ship to the other side and the way they did it, as to say that the WWF, WWE were invading WCW, you really have to take notice. And I really believe at this point in time is when the war really started to really catch on.
And then I think as well, they said on the documentary that, I think it was Scott Hall that said, I went to WCW. I didn't think it'd be as good creatively for me, because obviously he was getting a big push as Razor Ramon. He was one of the top stars in WWF, but he took the contract anyways. Helped DDP, helped kind of broker the deal, you know, get them set up. And then we had, you know, Hall and Nash, and then we did the angle where Scott Hall basically says, yeah, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. And he finally teased that he's got his friend coming in. And then we finally saw Kevin Nash show up. And then, of course, all led to Bash at the Beach 96, where we got a chance to see Hall and Nash in the ring. And then, of course, the big angle was Hulk Hogan comes down. You think Hulk Hogan's going to help save the day, help his old friend Randy Savage. And then he leg drops Randy Savage. And the New World Order begins. That's the last time he would wear the red and yellow at that time. And suddenly, and I remember that night, Frank, I just thought, oh my gosh, Hulk Hogan turned heel? Now, this is something that's really to watch, because who would have thought that Hulk Hogan would turn heel? Because I kind of remember that period thinking, okay, who's going to be the third guy?
Right.
And we'd heard all kinds of rumors. The names was the who's who in wrestling, who could the third guy be? And there was some suggestion maybe it's going to be Hulk Hogan, but you quickly would shoot that down. He's like the most popular star in wrestling, so he's not going to do it. And then Bash at the Beach comes, and he drops a leg on Randy Savage. And boy, Frank, I mean, that's when you got people talking. That's when everything really came to the forefront of this is something special, and this is something you have to watch. And this was a very important angle. And as I said, everybody, I can remember, you know, all my friends were talking, hey, did you hear about Hulk Hogan? He turned heel. And then you got to watch that Nitro to see where they go from here. And I mean, just the excitement of that angle. I mean, I can still remember it to this day, like it was yesterday, and how exciting it was at that time in wrestling.
Absolutely, man. And just to go back and look at the footage and look at the Nitros that led up to the Hogan heel turn at Bash at the Beach. I mean, everything that I have seen, you know, it wasn't necessarily set in stone that it was going to be Hulk Hogan that was going to come out there and be the third guy. I mean, there had been rumors, like you said, names thrown around. One of the prevalent names that they were talking about was Sting possibly joining the two outsiders here. And if you went back and looked at the Great American Bash 96 there, I guess when this whole thing was going down, there was some legal stuff going on there from the WWF side. They were trying to sue WCW because they said that Hall and Nash were basically portraying the same characters they did in WWF, Diesel and Razor Ramon. So, I mean, Eric Bischoff point blank asked him at the Great American Bash, hey, do you work for the WWF? They both say no. And if you remember on that spot there, Scott Hall threw out some names. He says, who's your three guys? I think he said one of them was Hulk Hogan. And it got an amount of boos from the audience there. So I don't necessarily know. If you look back at it now, Hogan had been getting booed in WCW for some time there, I believe 94 to 96. So it's just when he finally turned there at Bash at the Beach, and just to see the people react to that, it was great to see. But there was one guy, Steve, that wasn't fooled. It wasn't surprised when Hogan finally turned. And that was a guy who really played it up that night. Some people say that he kind of blew it when he said what he said, but Bobby the Brain Heenan said it. Whose side is he on when he hit the mat, when he hit the ring? And he said, you know, all the stuff that he said about Hogan for years, about how Hogan was a jerk, how Hogan was all about the money, how Hogan was all about himself, it all came out there at Bash the Beach, and Hogan, you know, turns heel on Randy Savage, and really, and in my opinion, they just really just revolutionized the business at the point. To the point where WWF looked at them and like, you know, they were competition before, but they got some real big competition going on now with this NWO angle. And of course, what does the WWE do? They're trying to shut it down legally.
I think it was interesting on the documentary, you had Vince McMahon talk about, you know, the Monday Night Wars starting, and the first time he saw, you know, Nitro, he's like, well, this is going to be competition.
Right.
And then he was also talking about Hulk Hogan and saying that, you know, 93 or whatever, when he left, that he felt that Hogan had reached the zenith of his career at that time. And I'm just thinking, boy, did you mess up on that one, didn't you? Because look how much money the guy made in WCW when he went and did something that was original in terms of his character, and that was turning heel. I kind of always think with him and John Cena, because John Cena is kind of the modern day Hulk Hogan, I guess, on a smaller scale. But you know, we've talked about it before. You know, maybe Cena could turn heel. Never has happened. Maybe someday, if he does turn heel in the right situation, it could mean something. Who knows? But I just thought that was interesting that he was talking that, you know, 93, I think he basically thought, you know, Hogan was at, you know, past his prime and he was going to go on the backside of his career. And then I also kind of think, and they didn't talk about this on the documentary, but I was thinking back at that time period, what was going on with WWF. And you remember that Jim Ross kept saying after Hall and Nash showed up in WCW that Razor Ramon and Diesel were going to show back up in WWF.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
And it was the fake Razor and the fake Diesel. And I, when I think back to that period, I think they really helped WCW, because I think a lot of people were resentful that for, you know, weeks and weeks now, he's like, yeah, you know, Diesel's returning, Razor Ramon's coming back. And then they showed up, and it was, of course, fake Razor and fake Diesel. Because I think a lot of people saw that and said, boy, WWF is looking really lame because WCW's got the stars now, and WWF is trying to trick people thinking that these guys are Razor and Diesel at that time.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, they actually, this documentary that we're talking about here, if you bought the Blu-ray set of this documentary, they give you the Legends of Wrestling Roundtable, and they actually do bring that up. They actually do bring up Jim Ross coming out and saying, hey, you know, next week Razor and Diesel are coming back to Raw. Which incidentally had Eric, you know, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were down in Atlanta. They were working off of deal memos, so they hadn't actually signed an ironclad contract yet with WCW. So Jim Ross comes in and says, "We're bringing back Razor and Diesel next week." Eric Bischoff thinks Paul and Nash are going back to WWF, so he gives these guys $400,000 more money to sign ironclad deals. So so basically, you know, they're at the show, they're at Nitro. Paul and Nash and Eric Bischoff, they're watching the WWF show, and Jim Ross brings out the two guys, and Bischoff looks at the screen and looks at them, and like, whoa, dude, I just spent $800,000 more than I had to sign two guys already signed. So,
but that's okay, because at that time, you know, Eric was throwing around the money left and right.
Right, but it wasn't his money.
Well, he didn't care.
Yeah, but it wasn't his money. And that's the reason why, that's kind of the reason why, at the end, towards the end there of WCW, they had all these stupid contracts that they had to fulfill because of all the money that they wasted during the prime of the career of WCW's lifespan. But, you know, going back to Hogan right quick, you know, McMahon thought that Hogan's zenith had passed him in 93. Obviously, that was false, because when Hogan debuted in WCW in 94 at Bash at the Beach, it was a record breaker there for them as far as WCW. Actually, now we're going to make some money on pay-per-view. And I think it competed against, what was that, the King of the Ring? And it outdid the King of the Ring. It made the news. It made the press. So Hogan had a lot there, and so did Savage. I mean, obviously Savage had a lot there when he went down there. Hogan and Macho Man really changed it. And like, I'm sorry, I've heard McMahon say many times how Hogan legitimized WCW. He really did. When you think about it, from where they had been and where they were going, and Hogan was still a big name in there. I mean, while the NWO were spray painting people and being in black and white video and public announcements, WWE was at the time pushing Gold Dust and pushing the Nation of Domination and all this other stupid stuff they were doing at the time. They could not compete with WCW and the NWO angle.
I think, too, in watching the documentary, and, you know, they interviewed Vince McMahon, and they obviously have segments where Eric Bischoff is talking. I just pointed out Vince's business was WWF at the time. I mean, he had a personal interest in making WWF successful. Eric Bischoff didn't. Eric Bischoff was an employee of Ted Turner.
Right.
So when I was talking to Scotty Riggs last week, you know, Scotty was something like, wrestler number 60 or so when he got to WCW. When he was checking out, when he was leaving, there was 190 wrestlers under contract to WCW. So you would see that, you know, Eric Bischoff was just spending the money left and right. He was trying to sign pretty much everybody. And, you know, I remember that period and thinking, wow, you know, Vince is in some serious trouble here. I mean, he's now lost Hall and Nash, who were two big characters, Diesel and Razor Ramon. Hogan's gone. Savage is gone. Piper is gone. Ric Flair went back to WCW after going to WWF for a while.
DiBiase.
DiBiase, and then later you'd have, obviously, Bret Hart that we talked about on a different podcast, and you're thinking, man, Vince is in some serious trouble. And in all this time, he's trying to become profitable again, you know, because he is losing money. In 94, 95, he's losing some money, and he's got to get that money back somehow and compete with Ted Turner's money, he's spending money left and right on his company and bringing in everybody that he can't sign anymore. So all of a sudden, WCW is, hey, you know, we got all these stars. Let's do something with these stars. And thus, we've had the birth of the NWO. Now, one thing I don't believe they mentioned in the documentary was the history of the idea of NWO and where it actually came from. Because actually, Eric Bischoff saw a similar angle in 1996 before he did the NWO angle with New Japan, how he had one promotion invading the other promotion. Then he came up with the idea, hey, I could give the idea that these outsiders are coming in, and what are they ultimately going to do? They're invading WCW. And I think that was kind of lost in later creations of NWO and then the different factions of NWO. And then obviously we saw NWO in WWF years later. But the concept was so cool, Frank, and that's what people I think sometimes forget is it was all about these guys coming in and invading WCW, taking over the production truck, taking over the announcer's table, taking over the TV shows, etc. And that's what really made the NWO really cool was these were what seemed like outside forces coming in to essentially invade WCW.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the angle. I mean, what you're talking about here as far as Bischoff getting the angle, the idea for the angle in from New Japan, once again, I don't know why it wasn't on this documentary, but on the Blu-ray disc of the Legends of Wrestling Roundtable, NWO, they do bring that up. It was, you know, they do bring it up that he did get the idea for New Japan. And they pitched it to Hall and Nash, and Hall and Nash went with it. But, you know, like you just said, it was pretty much chaos and unpredictability is what it, you know, showed on Nitro that you were not getting on Monday Night Raw. On Monday Night Raw at the time, I remember like it was yesterday, we were getting Wild Man Mark Merrow and Sable versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the IC belt. Mr. Perfect turns heel is what we were getting at the time. You're getting Shawn Michaels, and not a lot of people like Shawn Michaels. You were getting Psycho Sid and all that. I mean, you were getting Steve Austin.
Savio Vega,
yeah. You were getting all these guys. You were getting Stone Cold Steve Austin with Brian Pillman with the gun. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
I thought that was cool, yep. Though. That was a pretty cool incident that happened there. I like that. You were getting Undertaker and Mankind. But on Nitro, what were you getting? You were getting Hall and Nash, Diesel. You were getting Diesel and Razor because they hadn't even named these guys at the time. They were just calling them nothing. And then they told them the Outsiders. But the point is that you were getting Hogan, Hall, and Nash running roughshod over the entire WCW. Three guys kicking the entire WCW's ass is what you were getting on every Monday night. And that's what made it crazy. It's just the whole... you know, aura of what they were doing. It was, you know, showing up in the black limousine. Who's going to join next to join NWO? Who's going to come over from the WWF? Because all it was was WWF invading WCW. It's just we're calling it NWO. That's all it was. So who's going to join? And then it was DiBiase who came out at one point. He put up the four fingers and it's like, oh, DiBiase is going to be a horseman. Put up the five fingers next week. Five. It was stuff like that makes you look at today's product and you scratch your head. And like, how did you go from this to this?
Yeah, in fact, I was just looking up the NWO roster, and the one source had 29 original black and white NWO members. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword because certainly the group was the strongest when it was just the three. And that's the three that people most, when they think NWO, you think of the three original guys. And it was to me, it was the coolest when it was just those three. But then the problem you run into with NWO taking over WCW is, I mean, you would think about it, how could three guys come in and take over the company, right? So then, of course, you need more members, right? You're going to fight the whole WCW roster. Certainly you need more than three guys, even if they're the three big stars in the company. You still need more than three guys. So obviously they explain what Ted DiBiase's money came into effect, and and that would help the company. And then, of course, Eric Bischoff had to be set front and center in this, his most popular angle, so he became a big player in the company. And then it was inevitable that more characters were going to come into the group, but that was probably the period where, as you said, a lot of people were talking like, oh, is so-and-so in the NWO, or is he not? Is Ric Flair going to join the NWO? Is Sting going to join the NWO? Is Booker T, Harlem Heat, etc.? And that was that period of when they were starting to have more members come into the group. Because, it was literally like you're looking over your shoulder like, are you NWO? And the announcer's like, are you NWO? Who are you working for? You know, and that was a real exciting period. The criticism always of NWO is they never had an exit strategy for NWO. So you got to the 29 members, whatever it was. I mean, that was over a course of a couple of years. But, you know, once it reached its zenith, Frank, is where do you go from here? Because unless you're going to make the company turn NWO and get rid of WCW, eventually WCW was probably going to win this feud, right? So, you know, where do you go, you know, once the company is beat NWO or the NWO loses effectiveness, or then they started having the fighting within the group that they had to split off, you know, different factions of it. I think in the final analysis of NWO, and as cool as it was, as popular as it was, Frank, the problem was they never had the exit strategy, how to get out of it, because they were so popular. It ran successfully for a couple of years. It was cool, but then by the end, it started to get watered down. You had that NWO pay-per-view, which was like a train wreck. You had NWO referees, and I just think, you know, why you want to give Eric Bischoff credit for bringing NWO into the forefront. On the opposite side of that is they never had the exit strategy, how to get out of NWO and kind of move on from that angle, and that's probably pretty much the downfall of the WCW at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I look at the NWO, and as you mentioned, you know, earlier there, talking about members joining the group and how they had 29. I always looked at the NWO and the original players like this. You had Hogan there. Hogan was going to be the heavyweight champion of the world. That was your heavyweight champion. Hall and Nash, they were going to be your tag team champions right there. You add in, a guy like the Big Show, the Giant. Okay, he could be the U.S. champion. You got Shawn Waltman, X-Pac, he's your cruiserweight, all right? And then you can take a guy like maybe, you know, a Scott Norton or a Bagwell, and that could be your television champion right there. That's all you need right there, and you stop growing it, you know what I mean? That's it. That's all you need right there. That's your core wrestlers there. And then you have DiBiase as the money man, the manager behind the group. That's it. But when they started adding in Bischoff and Vincent and all these other different guys, they started adding in your cousin. They started adding in your mama and all these different people. It was done, man. It was watered down. And that's when it started really losing its effect. I think the NWO honestly started losing its momentum. It was at the end of 97 when they were going into that Sting Hogan match at Starrcade. 98 was just it was really starting to show just how really watered down this angle had become. Because now you got Sting, they did the debacle at Starrcade 97 with Sting and Hogan. And, you know, Hogan is wearing some of the ugliest glasses I've ever seen at this point. So it just really didn't have the same effect it did, say, as 96. And as time progressed on, you got Kevin Nash. I guess this is when Nash was booking the show. So you got Nash having, you know, little power struggles behind the scenes with Hogan. And like you said, there wasn't an end date. And then you have the Wolfpack. And it's like, man, it's like you have this one huge monster faction, the NWO Black and White, and this faction is splintered off into this Wolfpack. And I give credit where credit's due. The Wolfpack had a lot of momentum. But there were other groups at the time, Steve, in WCW, that they could have had against the NWO. You could have done something with Raven's Flock. They could easily feed with NWO. A lot of guys, you're talking about an exit strategy that WCW didn't have. Why not have gone to that Fall Brawl in 98 they did when they had the three teams, Black and White versus Wolfpack versus WCW? Why not have had that be the war to end it all? And the surviving faction destroys the other two factions. So if NWO, if WCW would have beat the Wolfpack or beat the Black and White, then that was the end of NWO. You never saw it again. You know?
I think it was brought up in the document was, you know, when it lost all its effectiveness is when they lost the focal point of why they were a group.
Right.
And they were a group because they were outsiders coming in to take over WCW.
Right.
Now, once you start having the inbreed fighting, and then you had LWO, and you had the jobber group with Vincent and you know Stevie Ray and some of the other guys, that's when it was time to end it and to move on to something different. But they didn't have anything different. They never planned it that far in advance to say, okay, once we get – I mean, they had to know at some – even as hot as it was.
Yeah.
And even at the hottest point, eventually it's going to come to an end.
Yeah.
I mean, just like when you have Stone Cold Steve Austin, he's not going to be very hot Stone Cold Steve Austin forever.
Right.
The Rock at his zenith, he's not going to be the super Rock of all time. Eventually, you have to come up with something different. And they never had that. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't understand. Maybe they didn't anticipate this angle getting as hot as it was. But once it was at its zenith, at its peak, all the momentum was on their side. They were, I mean, they showed the graph where the ratings, and we talk about ratings today, you know, 3.1 is a good rating, right? I mean, they were getting 6.0 ratings.
Yep.
For Nitro. I mean, they were mauling WWF, and at that point, even at its height, they should have said, okay, I mean, we're at the top of the mountain. The problem with top of the mountain is, then you go on the other side of the mountain and you start going down. Okay, once we start going down, where do we go from here? And this is a great angle. This is a great group. But their only answer was, let's create more NWO. I mean, let's create the LWO. Let's create the Wolfpack. And it just got redundant. And they lost all the focal point of, we're not taking over WCW anymore.
Right.
What are we? We're just fighting each other. And I think it was 1.2, they were saying that, at one point, the NWO, which was one limousine, then it was two limousines, then it was five limousines, then it was six limousines.
Right.
And like, who else is left on the roster?
Right.
Everybody that meant anything was a part of the NWO group, so who could really be on the other side? And I think that was really when it started to go. That was the other side of the mountain, because they just didn't know where to go from there. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, at the peak, they were really dominating the ratings. And I think really it forced Vince McMahon on the other side to come up with Stone Cold, to come up with The Rock, develop Mr. McMahon versus Austin. And DX came about. And I think that's where we kind of missed today in 2014. There's nothing cool. And I think they said it in the documentary too, is, you know, NWO made WCW cool.
Right.
Because they were basically a Southern promotion, right? And now suddenly they're the cool promotion. And they made the industry cool. They made the business cool. And unfortunately, they just didn't know when it was time to fold them and walk away.
Yeah. They just, you know, they didn't see the bigger picture there at the end there. And like you said, the inbreeding, the fighting between themselves there with the Wolfpack, and taking the main focus off of the original NWO was to take over and destroy WCW. They just lost it there. And they had a lot of stuff going on there at the time. Macho Man was feuding with Hogan. Then you had in Brutus Beefcake as disciple. You have Sting talking. Lex Luger was losing momentum there. It was really, when you start to look back at it now, it just really shows you why the company for itself went out of business. Because they didn't have the big picture, the focus. They were more about killing WWE and more about, you know, instead of sticking to what they're doing, they got to one-up Vince every single time. But Vince was already up in them because Vince was creating the new stars like The Rock, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, D-Generation X was, you know, as popular as NWO. I mean, you had a lot of stuff going on over the WWF at the time where you kind of went to WCW, and at this point, I'm thinking around, you know, late 98, 99, the NWO was kind of becoming a little bit passe as we were heading into the, you know, new millennium. And I mean, after the last, you know, hurrah with the NWO, as far as when they all came together on that Nitro January 4th, 99, when WCW just really was stupid. When we had the Hogan Nash, you know, finger poke of doom, which they kind of, if you notice in the documentary, they kind of sketch over that a little bit. They don't really touch it too much. You know, I kind of, you know, one of the criticisms I have about this documentary, for anybody who, like, who's not watching it in the network or you've already seen it, is it's too kayfabe for me. I want to hear the real story behind who came up with this finger poke of doom and how they thought that was a good idea. Because in my mind, that really truly is the night where WCW died. It was done. They never beat Raw ever again after that night. You know, that was the night that Mick Foley won the championship for The Rock, and, you know, they said 400,000 people turned over to Raw, and they just lost after that. And, you know, it was a done deal after that with the NWO, and we were kind of looking for the next big thing after that. And unfortunately, WCW had it with Goldberg, but Kevin Nash had the book, and they killed that in 98. There was nothing up after that. I mean, they tried it with the splinter groups like the New Blood, but it was not, man.
It's really too bad. And, you know, I was talking how desperate WWF looked when they had the fake Razor and the fake Diesel. And then I was thinking back to the end of WCW's run, how desperate they looked. Because I remember the pay-per-view where, remember Eric Bischoff was going to fight Vince McMahon?
Slammarie 98.
Yeah, so, I mean, he came out. I mean, that made that company look so Bush League. I mean, yeah. Who in their right mind was going to order the pay-per-view thinking that Vince McMahon's going to show up to fight Eric Bischoff?
Yeah.
And then, of course, they brought in Vince Russo, who came from WWF. And what was his big creative gem? NWO 2000, right?
Right.
So, you know, he was supposed to be this creative genius, and what did he do? He went back to NWO 2.
Right.
And that's what was kind of the end of the – I mean, he's on that documentary saying, well, Briel Brett got hurt and that killed the group. And, like, that's the best you could come up with? They hired you to
right.
be this genius?
Creative,
all you could come up with was NWO 2000?
Yeah, creative – and that's the funny thing about it. Creative genius who – you did all this stuff. And I'm not saying that he didn't do it. I don't know. I wasn't working there. All I know is that you come in with this resume – of The Rock and Triple H and Austin, and you gave the WWF this attitude, even though they got it from ECW. You did all this. But yet, the only thing you can do, I mean, it's kind of like, I'm wondering, was Vince Russo's creative hands, you know, shackled here, and the only thing he could do was NWO? Because that's the only thing that ever worked at WCW, was the NWO. It's not like when the only thing that worked in WCW before NWO was the Four Horsemen. And how many times did they go back to that? They, you know, WCW never, ever saw the bigger picture. They never did anything outside of, I would say, three things. The Horsemen, NWO, and Goldberg. That's all they ever did.
And I would say maybe a 3A or would be the cruiserweight division, because I think at one time their cruiserweight division was awesome.
But they just got that from ECW.
And it's kind of like with TNA. They had the X division, something that's different, separates you, and you don't – I mean, it's hot for a while, and then they just give up on it.
Yeah, and if you look at TNA, since we're going to bring them up, and that was Steve who did that, not me. The bottom
Sorry.
Line, bottom line is that – they've had NWO type groups there. They've done the what was it in 2000 and I mean what was it? They had the Main Event Mafia, was
yep.
kind of was kind of like NWO a little bit, kind of NWO Evolution Four Horsemen Hybrid. You had what was it? The Band in 2010. I mean, you talk about an NWO ripoff. Then you had what was it? Immortal. And just recently, you had Aces and Apes, which was an Eric Bischoff creation. So they've tried it. WWE's tried it with, you know, WWE tried it with the NWO themselves when they brought it back in 2002. Problem was, these guys are a little bit older, and the initial shock of them had worn off because they weren't doing NWO things.
No, not at all.
They were doing things that it just the group just didn't have the same luster as it did in WCW. because you can't take an element that you didn't create and try to do and try to use it on your TV show. NWO was supposed to be out of control. NWO was supposed to be running roughshod over everybody and everything, destroying stuff. You didn't get that in WWE. All you got was the poison. And it just didn't have the same effect on them. I mean, I was happy when I first heard they were coming back. But that for a while, and then you took Hogan out the group, and then you replaced Hogan with X-Pac. That's when you knew that this wasn't going to be around much longer. And I'll never forget it, is the night where Kevin Nash came back and said, after being on the sidelines for 8 months, I'm going to come out here tonight and I'm going to kick some ass, exactly his words. And what happens? Nash comes out there in that 8-man tag. Or it might have been a 10-man tag, I'm not sure. Doesn't even matter at this point, because Nash was in the ring and did a clothesline on Booker T, I believe it was, and he was in the ring for less than 10 seconds and he fell down and was out of action for another year. And that was the last time you saw the NWO. Next week on Raw, the night Eric Bischoff debuted, here comes Vince McMahon walking up to NWO music and says, "That's it, the NWO era is history. You'll never hear it again." And that was that.
Yeah, I can think back to the WWE, might have been the WWF still at that time,
yeah,
when Vince says, you know, I got to change things up. I got to bring the poison into my company.
Yeah.
The problem was, obviously, the NWO's, as I said before, the whole premise of the NWO was they were going to invade something. So when the chairman of the board is bringing in the NWO, what are they taking over?
Right.
And then, as you said, you know, 2002, they're older guys. They can't do as much as they used to be able to do. I mean, some would say Kevin Nash couldn't really do much anyway.
Well, they're older guys. They can't do as much as they used to do. But my point there was actually in a creative sense that
right.
You don't have, you know, why are these guys not showing up to their arena in black and white limousines? Why did you not try to get Eric Bischoff to align with this group, this group here? You could have brought an X-Pac in, and it could have been them four guys. And you could have got maybe somebody else from the Federation to make it work. It could have worked. If you had some big players come over there, but, you know, bottom line is, and they've said it there, a lot of it was Stone Cold Steve Austin had a problem with putting these guys over because of everything that happened over with the war. And that's one of the reasons why I mentioned the demise, because, I mean, Kevin Nash said it himself, and, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but Nash was talking about how the NWO t-shirt was one of the hot sellers there in 2002.
I think the problem, too, was, and I still say to this today, that the reason Vince really didn't put the NWO over in his group was NWO wasn't his creation. And I can also think back to the WCW invasion angle they did, that I mean, that could have been something that went on for years. WCW invading WWE, or actually been WWF at the time.
Right.
They started getting guys away from the Time Warner deals, or they started paying guys. You start bringing in the WCW faces, and you think, hey, they got something here, right? That invasion pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I mean, they had something with that too. I mean, we can criticize WCW, and certainly they deserve a lot of criticism. But I mean, Vince and 2001 had something when he bought WCW, when it's still the WCW fan base was still there. That, yeah, they said, okay, let's watch WWE, and they said, yeah, heck with that. And why did they say heck with that? Is you turn it on and all Vince is doing is burying the WCW guy. So, I mean, they had something. They could have done something with Invasion. They could have done something with NWO, you know, when they brought it back. But again, they weren't. WCW wasn't a Vince idea, and obviously NWO was not an Vince idea, and I think ultimately that's why they never put them over strong in their own company.
Well, and that to me is like stupid.
It is stupid.
It, because it shows that you're not that creative genius that maybe you think you are. Because you
is it about making money?
It's about making money, or is it about to suit your ego? It doesn't matter what. I mean, the bottom line of the situation is that you'll always go back to the video library and see what NWO was before you got it. Because anything that happened after WCW was bought by you is your fault. It's on you. So if the WCW invasion failed, it's because you let it fail. Because you didn't push
Absolutely.
It. If the NWO came in and you this day folded because your company didn't know how to creatively use these guys. I mean, NWO's roots go back to the WWF to begin with. You know what I'm saying? So for them to have brought these guys in, first of all, let's look at the NWO right quick from 2002 and the WWF. The entire thing started off wrong. When the NWO showed up at No Way Out, that pay-per-view when they first came in and did their debut, why in God's name would you have them debut and come out through the crowd or come through the entrance ramp and they're out there in the first segment? You kind of saved the surprise. You don't know where you guys are going from. First of all, I would have brought them through the crowd like the old days. But no. Let's just have them come down and rain, do their entrance, and come in and talk about how they're not here to kill the WWF. They're here to make it better. They do the segments backstage with Austin, and you do the segment with The Rock, who completely destroys NWO with their promo. Any credibility that this black and white logo, this white logo had, what it meant to the wrestling business, The Rock killed that in that promo he did backstage on No Way Out. You know, Chico Razor Ramon and Big Daddy Cool Diesel and telling Hogan to shove the camera, you killed it right there. You couldn't take it seriously anymore. And I don't care. I mean, another stupid thing they did is that deal they did with The Rock where they had the truck and slammed it into the ambulance, and then The Rock comes out 2 weeks later. Oh, he's had a little bandage on his ribs. That to me was stupid. Just like it was stupid when they did the whole deal with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Scott Hall, where Stone Cold had his leg around the pole and Hall hit him with the brick. That was dumb because Austin, after the first week of that, Austin started taping the wrong leg. He didn't give a damn about the angle. So there's a lot of stuff that went wrong there, and then ultimately at WrestleMania, we all know what happens. Hogan goes back being a babyface, has his run. NWO is kaput, is done at that point. Scott Hall gets released after that, what was it, the plane ride from hell? Hall gets released from the company. The company changed his name to WWE, and it was done.
Yeah, we were talking offline how this angle was so popular, it was so over, it revolutionized the business. You know, will we ever see that again? And I don't know. To me, the thing, it gave wrestling coolness because, you know, I think 92, 93, 94, there were some down periods in that wrestling industry. I think, the Big Show talks about, I was part of this old Dungeon of Doom gimmick, you know,
right.
This old faction, you know, that was so passe. And suddenly you had something creative, new, fresh. And, I mean, in 2014, we got WrestleMania coming up, and there's nothing cool, fresh at all. And it's been a long time. And I think go back to 2001, 2002, where they had that last opportunity to do something with the WCW brand, I guess, that they bought from Turner, and they never really did much with it. And they, as you said, they could have made NWO 2002 mean something, but I don't know, Frank, did they bring it back to sell some more T-shirts, or what was the idea there?
You know what? I think what it was is Vince was pulling at straws, trying to get something. The business had really imploded, and he wasn't expecting it. I mean, I think the WWE's philosophy at that point in time was that we bought WCW, ECW went out of business first in January of 2001. We buy the WCW. All these WCW fans are going to come over to watch our show now because they got nothing else to watch. So we'll bring these guys in. But here's the problem. Majority of these guys are under contract to AOL Time Warner, so we're not going to spend the cash to get them. Otherwise, we would have had a real super WrestleMania next year with WrestleMania 18, where we could have had Austin versus Goldberg, Hogan, Rock, could have had Hall and Nash or anybody else on that show. And they just didn't want to spend the money. So I think, you know, when NWO came in 2002, it was the last chance to do something with something from WCW. I mean, and there's countless ways that angle could work. That angle could work right now if they wanted it to. All you have to do is put, you know, new people in it. But the whole concept, like you said earlier, Steve, was WWF guys invading WCW. The only way that angle would work now, it would have to be these guys rebelling against the authority. And I don't ever remember the NWO Black and White ever being a babyface. So that wouldn't work. But I will tell you one thing. You mentioned the whole wasn't to sell T-shirts. About a year or two ago on the WWE's shop.com website, they were selling, I know they still sell the Black and White NWO T-shirt because when I went to Raw last month, people were more like, oh, NWO shirts. Because me and my crew, we were all wearing NWO shirts. So they were selling the Wolfpack T-shirt up there, and that Wolfpack shirt sold out pretty fast. So they still got the fans there. And obviously, they know they do, because why else would they put out the NWO Revolution DVD?
True. Now, something that I brought back some memories when I was watching the documentary was the effectiveness of being outdoors for Nitro.
Yeah.
And the one that always comes to mind is the one outdoors where they're taking Rey Mysterio and ramming him into the truck. And I think they said what Bischoff was talking, how was that the one in Orlando?
Yeah, Disney MGM, yeah.
Yeah, where they said, you know, people thought that something was real going on, and they're calling 911 to get, you know, security to come out. And
right, the police
and the fire, yeah. Fire department's coming, you know,
yeah.
How real that seemed to be. And then I also thought the angle they did with Sting coming down from the helicopter.
Oh, yeah.
And this is obviously, this is something you can't do inside an arena. And I just, that was so creative, is that they had those outdoor Nitros. It's something you really don't see anymore in wrestling, is outdoor events. I mean, we've seen a couple WrestleManias be outdoors.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, think of, you know, if Raw would go outdoors, or even if Impact would get creative. I think you've said this before, is go outdoors at Orlando and run some shows.
Oh, yeah.
Just to give the show a different flavor.
Yeah. The atmosphere would be great. I mean, especially in the summertime. I'm really surprised WWE doesn't run any summer shows. Because, I mean, and like SummerSlam, I mean, I remember one year, and this is why I say WCW was just, you know, when it comes down to, you know, being innovative, they were very innovative with coming up with ideas of how to do things outside. I mean, I remember Bash at the Beach 94, or 95, excuse me. They did that in Huntington Beach, California, right on the beach. And they brought, you know, I think over 100,000 people showed up there to Bash at the Beach that year. And, WWE could do something like this. You know, they choose to just, it's in the arena and it's stale. And I don't know, a change of scenery is good. A change of scenery is always good.
And, of course, the one thing I don't think they brought up as well, maybe they did in that roundtable that you've seen, was, of course, the music, which was so essential. I mean, we talked about this on the last podcast in our criticism of WWE. They're, you know, editing out a lot of the old music. And, I mean, could the NWO have been as popular without that music? I mean, when you think NWO, I think it was Booker T. First thing he says, he thinks of NWO as the music now.
Yep.
And I don't think that music gets as much credit as it does for really helping that group get over. I mean, as soon as you heard that music, you just knew the NWO was coming out. And I think in the annals of you know, greatest wrestling themes, I mean, that's got to be a top five theme of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has to be. I mean, you have to put that music, because everybody knows that music. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Matter. It doesn't matter if you're a wrestling fan or not. You know that song when it comes on. You know, so that, you know, and on the roundtable discussion, unfortunately, they don't talk about the origins of the music. That's something there that, I mean, if Jimmy Hart ever does a shoot interview, that would be the one that you would ask him about that. You know, where did you guys find this song? Because all it is basically, I think it's just a bunch of Jimi Hendrix riffs put together to make one song. But it's a wonderful piece of music. I think currently it's my ringtone on my phone right now, to be honest with you. So it's just a cool piece of music. It's a cool piece of music. It's better than a lot of crap they got out there today, I tell you that much. And it's always a good pop. You see Kevin Nash come back, and that song plays, the porno music plays. Always good stuff.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, the song is called Rock House by Frank Shelley. I think you talked about this on the last podcast as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's always been rumored that it came from a porn movie, right?
That's what they say.
So that's always been the rumor. I don't know if anybody's ever actually confirmed that. I don't know if somebody was, you know, watching one of those, and they said, "Hey, this is pretty cool music. Let's use this in a wrestling angle." But it's always been the rumors that it came from a porn movie.
Yeah, I cannot imagine. I mean, in WWE, over the years. They don't do it now, but they have dubs over NWO music, you know, the NWO music, and they put two other songs with it. But I can't imagine it ever being what it, you know, that music can never be replaced. It's kind of like, would you ever expect, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin to come out saying anything other than the Breaking Glass or an Undertaker coming out saying anything other than the Gong? You can't imagine it, and it's just one of those things that, you know, through the annals of time, that music, even till this day, it shows you, really, honestly, we're in 2014, and we're talking about an angle that happened all the way back in 96. And we're talking about the music all the way from 96. That shows you just how this thing has survived. And you can watch Raw and SmackDown and all that stuff, and you, every show, I guarantee you, you're going to see people in the crowd wearing NWO shirts. I know myself, because I was there at Staples back last month, and I was wearing them, and so was, you know, everybody I went with. And when there was a guy there, Steve, that was wearing an NWO t-shirt, the NWO for Life shirt, and black sweatpants with NWO logos all over. And this is not even an active faction in wrestling. Hasn't been active since 2002. But it still brings out people.
Of course, you're talking about the t-shirt, and a couple things come to mind with that t-shirt. One was when Dusty Rhodes joined NWO.
Yeah.
Where did they find a t-shirt to fit that?
I tell you what, I think that might have been a 304 right there, 304X.
Wow. And then, of course, you know, when I think of the t-shirt, I can remember that the old TV commercial they did.
Yep.
Where what one t-shirt was, what, $20, two was $40, and they kept going up in price.
Yep. Yep.
Or in quantity, but of course it didn't change the price. I mean, the idea is that you buy, you know, 10 shirts and get it cheaper. I mean, 10 shirts was $200. They didn't give you a discount, but they kept saying, you know, buy the shirt.
Yeah, well, you know, and they also, the original NWO t-shirt commercial, they were talking about how they had large, extra large, and giant size. And they were talking about how the all proceeds from the t-shirt would go to the Ric Flair Retirement Fund. So, it was, that's classic stuff, man. That's classic.
They could have done hair restoration for Randy Savage at the time.
That was one of those NWO attacks. Hogan, come on, really? Hogan's out there talking about the Nacho Man's bald head. And, I mean, really? It was like Hogan's talking about, hey, brother, I'm walking around and I'm seeing this glow coming off the Macho Man's bald head. We're going to do something about that. Took a can of spray painted Savage's head. Oh, man.
Remember years ago they had that bottle you could buy and you could spray your bald spot?
Right.
I wonder if that was inspired. They inspired that.
Could have been. Just like...
Because I don't think I ever caught on, but I always think, you know, when they would spray paint the bald spots, was, hey, you could buy this product where you just spray your bald spot and it fills in air.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. Hogan saying something about somebody's bald head? That's just hilarious. Just like... Hogan coming off. I mean, I know we're getting a little off topic, but it's just so stupid. Halloween Havoc 96. Anybody has a network, check out Halloween Havoc 96 and watch Hogan come down the aisle with that damn toupee on his head. just ignorant, stupid stuff, man. Just like, wow.
I think you mentioned it before, but one of the things that was so cool about NWO as well was the public service announcements.
Yep.
And I just think, you know, why can't they do something like that today? Something creative, or, you know, the following message is brought to you by the New World Order or whoever the group is, and have these cool vignettes where it really gets the characters over. And I think too, when I think NWO, and I think they said it on the documentary too, was they made heels cool.
Yep.
Where, I mean, usually it's just babyface heel. You root for the babyface if you're, you know, typically like the babyface. But these heels were so cool that you had to like them. I mean, when Hall would come out and say, "Are you here to see the NWO? Are you here to WCW?" And then you get the bigger pop was NWO. So that was something that was so different. Was the heels are cool, and that was okay. It was cool to root for the heels.
Yeah, you're kind of getting that right now in the current WWE with the Wyatt family, because the Wyatt family are kind of cool. It's got a creepy kind of vibe to it. I like the Wyatt family. I think they're in awesome fashion. And some of the video stuff that they do with him reminds me of the NWO back in the day. It's kind of like the Shield, when the Shield would cut promos and they had that camera back there and they're going from one guy to the other guy to the other guy. Very, very NWO-esque type video there. So you have that. But the thing with it is that, you know, other than, I mean, the Shield, they would say is the best faction ever in wrestling because of the work rate that they have. But there are no cool factions today. You know, like I said, I think the Wyatt family is cool, but that's just me. You know, there is nothing on the level of NWO or D-Generation X. And personally, DX's last runs in WWF, while I'm talking about it, they took a lot, they copied a lot from NWO. I mean, I don't remember seeing the DX crew spray painting stuff or any of that. And I think that thing went on a little too long. I think, you know, how many times did they bring DX back?
Right. The DX painting, the DX on the corporate jet.
Exactly. I mean, come on. I mean, I remember NWO doing that on the Turner video truck.
Right.
When they spray painted NWO they spray painted NWO all over the video truck right there, you know, crossing out TNT and TBS, you know, and CNN. I mean, that was innovative. Not DX taking a light and flashing on the building like they spray painted the building. There's something cool about that. I'm sorry. It's not. I'm 30 years old, man, and now I don't really think there's cool about going out and telling somebody to suck it. I just don't think it's cool at all. I mean, it was cool when I was a teenager, yeah. But
and the crotch chop?
The crotch chop, yeah. The crotch chop is cool. But there's no way I'm going to tell a guy, hey, you suck it. That's not going down. There's nothing cool about that, man.
And, of course, they had the catchphrase, you know, for life.
Yeah, for life.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, they had the T-shirt. They had the public service announcements.
Yep.
I think the one thing that they ran into was, I said before with the pay-per-view, was it was all NWO, and eventually it was going to be NWO Nitro. And then the problem is, if you're just NWO, I mean, the idea was to have a separate brand called NWO, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
The problem is, if you have a separate brand where there's no WCW wrestlers and the NWO brand, then obviously the NWO guys have to fight each other then.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that right quick, that pay-per-view they put out. NWO sold out, the first one. And, you know, like Nash said there, he says, I can see clearly now why they were where they were at before we got here. Because if you have your own referees, how do you lose matches?
Right, exactly.
And I remember that pay-per-view, man. It's on the network. People, if you want to watch it. It's just... My God, man, that Miss NWO contest, some of the ugliest women I've ever seen are all in one area there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa on that show. And it's just bad. And you know, it's just a lot of it is just filler matches with B team NWO guys. And I think they only did that one time where it was only an NWO branded show, but next year it became WCW NWO, I believe, sold out. So the branding was there. I mean, a lot of people said, even Diamond Dallas Page, who you can vote for right now for the Gurry.net Hall of Fame, he said the whole company was about to go NWO. It was that strong. I don't think that would work, personally.
No, I don't either.
You can't call a wrestling, welcome to New World Order. Is that what we're going to do it? Yeah, that wouldn't work. That to me, that brand identity is always would be, after NWO is long gone, it was always WCW. That's what it was. So, I mean, it was obvious they did the two experiments there with NWO sold out being a failure. Also, with the very first, I mean, that Nitro, that NWO Nitro they did where they took apart the stage and all that stuff. I remember that night, that was one of the first times that Raw actually beat Nitro in the rings at that period of time. Simply because I tuned in to watch Nitro, not to watch a construction show. So, that was a night there where I think Shawn and Triple H were out there, and you know they showed their ass on TV. Do you remember that?
I do.
That was that night when they did all that stuff. They actually beat Nitro that night. So hey, you know, maybe the NWO Nitro, that experiment didn't work that night, and I don't think it would work. I don't think that I mean, they started toll branding new shows at one point, WCW and NWO, but as far as NWO being the brand and getting rid of WCW, I think that would have been a huge mistake. And I'm glad that didn't happen.
The ultimate failure is with WCW was there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think they said that on the documentary as well. And the problem, too, with Eric Bischoff was I think he said, okay, I got something good. I got something popular. Let's just make it more and more and more and more. And then the problem is it's too much.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you like burritos, and if you eat burritos every day and then you start eating burritos twice a day, you start eating burritos three times a day, Frank, suddenly that burrito doesn't taste quite as good, right? So I think that's the problem they ran into.
That's a lot of burritos.
Yeah, that's a lot of burritos. Yeah. That's a lot of trips to the bathroom, too.
Yeah.
But my point is that they just thought, give us more, give us more, give us these different factions, give us the TV show, give us the sold-out pay-per-view. And I think we've learned a lot with today's wrestling. More is not necessarily better if you don't have the quality there. It's more about quality than it is quantity. And that was the problem with NWO is they just wanted to give you more of it and different factions and water it down. And this guy's NWO. And then they said everybody in the roster wanted to be part of NWO and to give you it gave the guy instant credibility if you were NWO. Well, the problem is, then I was talking with Scotty Riggs. I never wanted to be NWO because I knew the guys on top. And even though if you're part of NWO, I mean, if you're the 29th guy in NWO, what does it really mean?
Right.
You're not going to go any further in the company. You're not going to get any titles. You're not going to probably get a massive push. You're just there. I mean, you're just a body. I mean, I think some of those old interviews where they would have the NWO guys, it was like 20 guys in the ring.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, that's just like super watered. Like you were saying before, you know, have the essential guys, have some extra guys, some secondary guys. But the problem is they just kept putting more and more, and then Wolfpack and LWO and the Jobber Crew, and then they just didn't know when it was time to move on.
Yeah, and that's the point right there. When it was time to move on from this and go to something else, you could easily have dusted NWO off in a couple of years if you want to do it again. But the way it ended, that's the reason why, till this day, there's a lot of people that don't want to see it ever again. Because they overdid it. Like me personally, I kind of don't want to see the angle again because you will never be able to capture the magic you did the first time around.
Absolutely.
It would be a complete waste of time. Just like it's a waste of time every time I see Triple H out there with Shawn Michaels doing that DX. It's old. It's passé. And it shows that there's been no evolution in the business, that we have to keep going back to this DX thing. You know, that's what I was saying earlier with the Wyatt family. The Wyatt family is something that's really kind of, it might have been something that was done in the past with, you know, maybe a Kelvin Sullivan or somebody like that. But in today's generation, it's something fresh. It's something new. I mean, NWO, hey, I say this, that we'll never see it again, but they might eventually, when they decide to dust it off one more time, and you know, we'll see what happens with that. But to me, the ultimate failure of the group is that Hogan had too much political control, too much of the creative control, and the group just started getting watered down with too many bodies. And after a while, it just didn't mean anything. And WCW, like I said, just couldn't. They had never had anything past NWO. It was all NWO. And that's what ultimately killed them. You got this angle still going on in 1999. You look over what's going on at the WWF. They got the corporate ministry going on. They got The Rock. They got Stone Cold Steve Austin. You got Triple H coming up. You got Mick Foley becoming a mega star. You can't compete with that, with these three little letters. It was done, man. It's just a done deal. And then on top of that, you never had the Wolfpack in the black and white feud at the end. You never had that one big war, and then you all came back together. And then you got Luger in it, and it was god-awful bad television.
I think the bottom line, too, is as you compare the two companies, was I think it was Nash that said it. You know, WWF is a machine, and WCW is the ATM machine.
Yep.
That Vince... I mean, I can never imagine a scenario where Vince would have all these egos and I got, you got creative control, and you've got creative control, and you, your group's got creative control, and you got creative control, and you got creative control, and I only gave you 150 dates.
Yep.
I mean, this is why Vince, I mean, going back to Hall and Nash with 95, 96, when he said, you know, I can't do that deal because if I give you 150 dates, next guy who's got a contract that comes up and says, Vince, I want 150 dates.
Yep.
I can't do it. Totally defensive Vince. I mean, really, the only guy he's really given that reduced schedule is The Undertaker.
Yep.
There's other people, there's a lot of people that ask for that type of schedule, but really, over the years, just The Undertaker. So that's really the bottom line here was the money of Ted Turner, Eric Bischoff's inability to manage the stars. I mean, it's one thing to get the stars, but when you have the stars, it's kind of like a head coach of a football team. Everybody says, hey, coach, I want to run this play. Throw the ball to me. And the coach says, look, if we're going to win, we got to play as a team.
Right.
It's not about you catching a touchdown pass. It's not you about running the ball, making a touchdown. It's not you about making a sack. It's not you getting a fumble recovery. It's about us working together as a team to win. And the problem with WCW and NWO and the whole faction there was, for the most part, everybody was out for themselves.
Yep.
And the management style said, okay, you can work this date. You can work this contract. You got creative control. You can veto this. You don't have to do this. And then, as we've said, you know, Monday Nitro comes, and they're totally rewriting the show because everybody says, well, I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that, and I got to be the champion, and I can't lose to this guy. And who is this guy? It just got totally out of – it was a domino effect, Frank, and the company ultimately failed.
Yep. And people can say all they want to about – AOL Time Warner merging and all that stuff. Hey, that might have played a big part of it, but let's talk about the creative stuff that was going on before that. Let's talk about how bad the show was. Let's talk about 1999, 2000, 2001. Let's talk about the fact of how, you know, Hogan would take his ball and go home and then come back when you wanted to. Let's talk about how Nash booked himself against Goldberg. Let's talk about how they turned Goldberg heel. You know, there's a lot of different things, but that's the one thing you can always go back to in the pinnacles of time and through video, you know, through video footage of the NWO, you can go back to the good times. And at the end of the day, it's something that, you know, we're talking about now, we'll continue to talk about it. And we can also talk about the what ifs and what would have happened. And just look back at that stuff and be like, wow. And then look at the product today and be like, you really had something special back then.
And then, too, to kind of wrap up and tie it together with yesterday's podcast, we were talking about the WWE Network, and, you know, we're doing this NWO discussion. And then I talked to Frank today, and he's like, well, the 1996 Bash at the Beach is not on the network currently. And, I mean, that was the pinnacle. That's what kicked off the angle. And, again, Frank, it goes back to our criticism yesterday, the St. Patrick's Day edition of the Gerwick Report podcast is – you know, why are these pay-per-views missing? And it wasn't just the 96 Bash at the Beach. There are other pay-per-views missing as well.
Yes. I mean, we're doing this podcast right now, and I'm just going through, scrolling through to see if they've added these things back. But right now, the WCW Video On Demand section, I got Bash at the Beach 95 and 96 are missing. I got WCW Battle Bowl pay-per-view is missing. You got Beach Blast 93 is missing. You got Chi-Town Rumble 89 is missing. You got Halloween Havoc 90 is also missing. So, I mean, I don't know if it's maintenance going on. I don't know if they're putting up the actual, you know, master copies of this, but I don't understand it. And I can tell you one thing right now, the WrestleMania 4 that they have on here, I believe is the dubbed DVD version from the Anthology series. And the reason why I say that is because the Slicksters music is dubbed. It's not Giant Soul Bro. It's that other one they were using on the when they were dubbing it. So,
amazing.
A lot of stuff, man.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I can encourage the subscribers of the network to go watch the Bash of the Beach in 96, and you could just relive the birth of the NWO. But as we do this podcast on the 18th here, it's not currently there. But I don't know, Frank Ken, as we wrap up here in the conclusion, it's too bad that it ended the way it did. It had so much, but I mean, it had the potential, and it certainly it lived out to its potential. But the problem is they just didn't know when it was time to move on, to move forward. Too many chefs in the kitchen, as they would say, is a pun there. They just didn't know when it was time to move on, move forward. We had Vince Russo come in at the end of WCW. We had, I think at the end of the company, it was just a train wreck of what happened there. And, of course, in the end, as we say today in 2014, the company was sold to Vince McMahon. Now the video library is available on the WWE Network. Probably more will be added in the future. But I don't know, Frank, kind of as we wrap here in conclusion, the legacy of NWO, just the importance of it as a group, the music, the angle, the idea, the invasion. I guess when you think back to it, you know, where does it rank all time? Is it one of the most creative angles you've ever seen? Can we ever see anything like it again? Obviously, it changed the business for the better. It helped the Monday Night Wars. So I guess kind of to do the final analysis on NWO, you know, where does it rank all time? Is it the most creative thing you've ever seen?
It will probably go down as one of the top three angles ever in the business, simply because it changed the business. It set the business on fire. They weren't talking. I mean, yeah, they were talking about this war going on between the two factions for years, and then, yeah, Nitro comes along, and they start the Monday Night War up. But nobody was talking about it until July 7th, 96, when Hogan turned. And from then on out, it was NWO, it was WCW versus WWF, and it was a lot of shots being taken back and forth on both shows. You add into everything else that was going on, the Monday Night War with DX forming and the Montreal Screwjob and the evolution of Taker and all this stuff. All this stuff happened here because of three guys down there and down south forming the NWO. So it ranks up there as one of the top three angles ever in the business. And it will go down as probably the most creative thing I've seen, because there was a lot more creativity on that end than watching a bunch of grown men say suck it on the other show.
And I would agree with Frank's assessment there. I think it's probably, you know, I've been watching probably wrestling longer, watching wrestling longer than Frank, and I mean, that's what really brought me back. I mean, honestly, I could probably say the NWO is the reason there's Gerwig.net, because in 96, I couldn't imagine, you know, prior to the NWO angle, I couldn't imagine me doing a website devoted to wrestling, say, 95 or 96. But, you know, but once the NWO kicked off and it was cool and it was fun to talk about wrestling and all your friends were talking about wrestling and, you know, they had you over for the pay-per-views or you had them over the pay-per-views. Monday night, I'm a football fan, and Monday nights, I didn't watch football during the Monday Night Wars.
Yep.
I was watching wrestling because wrestling was must-see TV. And again, that's something we talk about with today's product is Raw, Impact, SmackDown. They're just not must-see shows week to week. I mean, there's a couple good Raws here, a couple good Raws there. But, I mean, it's not must-see television, and we may never see it again because – I mean, the NWO was born on the idea that WCW grabbed two of Vince's top stars and brought them in. And then you kind of wondered, well, gosh, I wonder who else they could possibly get. And, you know, we're never going to see that again because, well, I mean, quite frankly, TNA is never going to be a competitive product to WWE. I mean, I guess you got Jeff Jarrett out there trying to start his own promotion. But those are the days when, you know, you'd watch a show because it was live and it was head-to-head and you didn't know what was going to happen, and suddenly somebody might jump ship. And, you know, we just don't get that anymore. And I guess, Frank, is just as we said it before, 2014, wrestling just isn't cool anymore.
No, and I was going to say right now, too, I remember back in the day when this whole thing was going down, when wrestling was really hot, and specifically the NWO, I remember going to school, and Tuesday it would be, hey, man, you see what happened on Nitro last night? And going up to your friends, doing the two sweet sign, and that's how we would communicate. I mean, everybody wanted to be NWO. Everybody. I mean, that was it. I mean, I don't really care for the group, but I will say it was two things you wanted to be back in the day. It was either NWO or you wanted to be DX. You know, and there was a lot of times you tell the teacher to suck it. So I did it several times. So security guard, hey, you suck it. And, you know, they ended up calling mom and all that and say, oh, your son told us something about sucking it. So, it was just, you know, it was cool. I mean, I don't see kids today, man, going to school and saying yes. You know, I don't see that one personally. Outside of WWE.
And then they probably have to explain to the principal that, my son was watching Monday Night Raw.
Right.
And they say, well, you know, maybe he shouldn't be watching wrestling.
Right.
If he's telling the teacher to suck it, maybe he shouldn't be watching wrestling.
Right. So, suck it and, you know, yeah. And I remember one time I was there and the counselor was like, well, we're going to go ahead and call your mom. Okay, well, you know what? You can go ahead and suck it again. Go ahead and call whoever you want. Those are fun times.
Yeah, I don't think you want to run up to your teacher and give him a crotch chop either. So
crotch chop the teacher several times. I'm telling you, we that's the thing about us. This is at a time when I was only 14 years old. So you're just copying what you see on TV because it's cool. So it was a lot of people who watched wrestling in my class, and they were giving the teacher middle fingers and it's like Stone Cold and. Hey, that's the LA County School District for you. But anyways, I should say LA Unified School District. But anyways, a lot of middle fingers, a lot of crotch chops going on. The girls out of the school. Oh, did you see what Frank just did over there? Yeah. So, yeah. But now today in my 30s, I would not dare tell a man to suck it. not going to happen.
That would not be too sweet.
That would not be too sweet at all.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, not what you did, but just the story of how...
Yeah, just the story of how things used to be as opposed to now, where we got an anti-bullying campaign. And bottom line is that, you know what? Stephanie McMahon had children, and she sees things differently now, and we're all suffering for it.
And then the crux is, you know, you used to talk about, as you said, Tuesday morning... What did you do? You talked to your friends about what'd you see on Raw or what'd you see on Nitro last night? And now, I mean, they just don't talk like that anymore.
Oh.
And, you know, Raw gets a 3.1, and I guess 3.1 is a good rating now. I mean, how quickly they forget about 1999 or 1998.
No, they don't forget. They just can't. They don't want to ask the question of where all these people go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we want to know what you think of NWO. You can give us your favorite moments, memories. I still think of a lot with the Sting angle, how, you know, they were, is Sting going to join? He was like the last holdout. Was he going to jump ship? Was he going to be part of the NWO?
He did. That's the Wolfpack. That sucked.
Yeah, that did. Yeah, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
He held out, and they shouldn't have done that. Of course, they put him in with Lex Luger, his friend or whatever, but still. I mean, that was one of the cooler parts of the NWO was the whole Sting angle. That he would, you know, be the Crow, and that he'd be in the rafters, and then he'd jump down from a helicopter on one of the cool Nitros with their outdoors. And so basically today we're reflecting on NWO, so you can give us your favorite memories, favorite matches, favorite members. I mean, who should have been in, who shouldn't have been in. I can think of a lot of guys who should never have been in part of that group. We could talk about that another time, but we want to know what you think. Leave your comments here at GerwickNet, the comments section down below. On this page, hopefully you're listening to us on Gerwick.net, www.gerweck.net. Since 1997, the Heat, the middle of the Monday Night Wars, or the birth of NWO, I should say. That's when, of course, it all heated up. And as we reflect today, you know, let us know what you think. And if you like this topic and you want to do other topics that you can suggest, we'd be open to doing that. Frank and I always... open to, you know, trying different topics that we want to get into that we can discuss. I mean, we've come up with some of our own, but if there's others out there you'd like us to get into, Frank D is, as I said before, is a walking encyclopedia of wrestling. So you throw a topic, I bet Frank has an opinion on it. So.
Absolutely. I mean, today, you know, we were supposed to go with the, you know, talk about documentary, but I like to give a backstory of certain things that maybe you don't know, or maybe you know. Hey, you know, you can find out new information about this that you didn't know before. So that's kind of like where I like to do. I'm kind of like Mike Chene, but I'm much more handsome.
And maybe a little more charismatic.
I would think so, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, again, you know, we appreciate you listening to our podcast on the NWO. Again, leave us your comments. Gerwick on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Gerwick.net on Facebook. I'm Steve Gerwick on Facebook. And you can always email us at betweentheropes@hotmail.com. Again, Frank, I appreciate it. Fun reliving the NWO, and hopefully fans will enjoy this podcast as well.
Absolutely, man. Today's podcast was just too sweet.